Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Learning Pod Network, brought to you by Impact Connections, where we will be taking a deep dive into the new world of learning pods that are driving educational innovation around the world. I'm your host, Steve Eno. The world has been changed forever by COVID-19. Right now, families and schools around the country are trying to figure out the best way forward without much support. That is why we have created the Impact Connections Learning Pod Network. We believe small group learning, driven by family needs and supported through a network of strong relationships, can improve education for everyone in this moment and beyond. On this podcast, we'll bring you advice from innovative educators and experts to help you create the best learning pod experience possible. If you are running your own learning pod or collection of learning pods, we would love for you to join our Impact Connections Learning Pod Network. Joining our network will give you access to all of our resources to take the teaching and learning happening in your learning pod to the next level, and will open up doors to more connections and opportunities for your students. At the end of this episode, I'll explain more about the benefits and how to join. But if you would like more information now, please go to www.impactconnections.org/community. So welcome, Ned. Welcome, Ned Cordemanch, to the podcast, my friend, co-founder, partner in crime through all this. But welcome. How's everything going for you today?
Good. Yeah. Thanks for having me. It's going well. I've had the great fortune of escaping my hometown and taking the family and just driving north for many, many hours in a sort of socially distanced and responsible way. And we're now quarantining ourselves in New York State, way out in the middle of nowhere, Adirondack State Park. And wasn't sure if I was going to be able to find a slice of service to make this happen. But there's so much going on right now. I'm really happy I could, because it's just exciting to be part of the conversation.
Yeah, no, thank you for making that effort and joining on to the convo today. But yeah, I'd love to dive right in. I've kind of given everyone your background already, and I've talked a little bit about our history together in the first episode. And I'd love to talk about kind of your experience during COVID-19, during the shutdown. Like, how has teaching changed in your experience, and what have been the biggest challenges during COVID?
Man, it's crazy to think back now that it's been, what, almost 6 months, or, you know, and because I think when we were in the thick of it, you as well, and you know, sort of with your boys and homeschooling, and I teach at an independent school, and the history department chair focused on high school kids, and it was wild because early on, nobody knew anything about what was safe or wasn't. So I remember initially our school was able to sort of throw things together and offer everything 100% virtual. And so we were doing Zoom classes, and we have Canvas as our backend LMS, you know, learning management system, sort of our course website. And it was obviously an intense and scary time for everyone, and still is. But I think what was most challenging initially was the fact that we didn't know how long this was going to last for. Our school initially billed it as a 3-week pause coming out of spring break. And so you're sort of planning for that and thinking, all right, well, I can actually run a special virtual specific project or hands-on something, and we'll make it 3 weeks. And then as guidance gets updated, and I completely obviously agreed with the call, we stayed virtual for the rest of the year. And so I know a lot of teachers hit a wall at that point, but maybe a part of me did too. But I agreed with the call, and I tried to reframe it and see the upside of the fact that, hey, we were incredibly fortunate to be able to beam in to Zoom with our kids on a daily basis, or at least on a regular basis, for at least an hour per class. And we were able to, as a result, support the kids where they were, their social emotional learning. And we tried to take it from there, where really trying to check in with the kids and figure out where their interests were, and not in so direct a way, trying to figure out where their sort of fears and their anxieties were. Because, you know, teenagers, if it's too direct, they'll sort of like shut down and like bail on you. And they aren't as into it because they feel like you're now a parental sort of like you're sort of picking. Right. So, but you know, we ran an awesome sort of fake news symposium, which we then sort of doubled to turn into a big 2-week sort of project-based thing where students were looking at how fake news, which is something as a history teacher, we're always fact checking and looking at our sources, evaluating our sources, and trying to figure out how, you know, we can evaluate quote unquote reality and the past or present. And so it was an awesome opportunity to do just that, but actually with these new times, looking at how quote unquote fake news around COVID, which is to say stuff that was scientifically inaccurate, but was getting sort of absolutely spun up and sort of whipped into a frenzy on social media, and how that was actually causing a lot of harm and in fact likely killing people. And in a couple of cases, there are some real specific examples of that. So, you know, there was a weird silver lining, and again, it's a reframe because the sum is still obviously a bleak and scary and awful picture, and yet trying to go with the flow as a teacher and find those silver linings, if only for the kids, but also as an educator, just use that as momentum instead of feeling like you're always fighting against headwinds, ended up being something that I think I and we, in terms of our history department, were able to find some traction with. And it's still unclear what we're doing in the fall, but I think the uncertainty was a major challenge. But we were really tried to use the scenario to gain the momentum and to actually help kids, I think, better understand their world. And hopefully, you know, lay some fears, if only slightly.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'd love to talk about that feeling of uncertainty a little more, just because I think everyone right now is in probably just as much uncertainty as we were in the springtime when all of this first happened. Lots of schools are closing. Like you said, you're not even sure exactly what's going to happen in the fall. So I'm just curious, how are you as a teacher managing this uncertainty, and how do you think parents might be able to find ways to manage the uncertainty as well?
I think, you know, as someone who spends a lot of time teaching entrepreneurship and thinking as sort of an historian and economist, certainly an amateur economist, I think a lot about how uncertainty and volatility can be really bad for some institutions or individuals within an economic system. But again, it actually creates in the ecosystem quite a bit of opportunity for growth, for, of course, change and some dynamism that otherwise wouldn't exist. Let's say like an old growth forest where the canopy is just sucking up 98% of that light or whatever it might be, right? So, you know, for photosynthesis. And so it's really difficult to be, you know, a little sapling. And so it's tough. And I work with parents and some individuals who've reached out to us at Impact Connections, which is really just looking for help. And guidance from teachers who have taught in sort of every corner of the economic landscape in the United States.
Right.
Really, we're also trying to encourage them to reframe and say, hey, there is nothing scarier than not knowing what the fall is going to look like. And it keeps me up at night with my kids, and they're quite a bit younger, and they're sort of in daycare and preschool. And yet, it's opened my eyes as a parent and certainly as an educator to the amazing sort of wealth of opportunities out there in terms of content and curriculum, in terms of guidance and support. Much of this tech and web-based, but people have stepped up, and whether it be learning pods, whether it be Khan Academy, which I think has really doubled down on some amazing, amazing work, all of it free for all ages. I mean, they've run this amazing summer virtual camp that my daughter has just loved and has brought a sense of normalcy to her. Urging parents to lean in a little bit to the fact that we're still going to be uncertain for who knows how long. And yet there's so much help out there. There's such strong communities out there. And as an historian, and I hope we can talk about this a little later, comparing all this to what happened in 1918 and the flu pandemic then, you know, we're actually far better connected and able educationally to overcome these challenges and emerge stronger as students, parents, institutions of education. And so, again, I don't mean to downplay the extreme risks and the fact that people are dying in the pandemic, but I hope the parents know that they're not alone in this. That's for sure.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, I would love to, I mean, the nerd in me would love to dig into some of the history, just because I'm seeing a lot of articles, and I'm sure a lot of parents are seeing the connection between education and the economy. Obviously, it's not always a direct connection. Sometimes it's parents can't work because they don't have any childcare, and that affects the economy. And so, yeah, I would love to dig into the historical perspective and get your thoughts on, like, how is this similar to the last pandemic, last century, and what lessons could we learn from it? Because I think parents really don't have time to think about that aspect of their situation right now. Most people are just kind of frantically trying to figure out the fall. And I would love to slow down a little bit and get your thoughts on that history and what we could learn about what happened during the last pandemic.
Yeah, this is my favorite part about the work we do with Impact Connections and on the back end, and you put it so well in terms of being sort of a sandbox for thinking about and trying out, you know, just new approaches to making education more effective and equitable. And so you and I have had so many of these conversations about, you know, try to look to the past for what could potentially be salient and valuable. And I know, like you said, none of us really have time for this. You and I do it because we love it. It gives us energy. But
right.
I think that's something that I'm so happy to give to parents as in terms of my profession as a history teacher, and then also through the work we do, and to give some of those best practices. And I think the biggest takeaways, short of running a whole course on it, are that different families, school districts, and regions around the country reacted very differently. And so schools were closed, especially in the second wave, and that I think it was like sort of the second year between year two and three of this pandemic. Some were closing, some were not. And some of the surprising schools that remained open were in some of the biggest districts in the country, namely Chicago and New York City, famously stayed open for much of the pandemic. And there's a lot of mixed evidence about that out there. And there's some interesting Google searches and some history run by both doctors and historians about whether that put families at risk, made the pandemic better, worse, or no impact. One big takeaway for families, I think, is that you really have to pick your own level of comfort and do your research and certainly consult your family physician, your pediatrician, and figure out what your local school district is offering. And then take control, right? I think that's one of the great opportunities and great realizations, hopefully, for all families, is that, you know, ultimately they have the final say and they have all the tools necessary to help their kids thrive. And whatever that choice is for them, whether it be to go with a learning pod for the short or long term, to fall in love with homeschooling and see the advantages of that as you have done and seen your boys just take off, or, you know, your public or private institution, you know, whatever they're offering, where do you stand on that? And then fill in the gaps, because again, you're not alone. There's a ton of resource out there. And that was something that certainly didn't exist in 1918. And there's been some really interesting articles about the stuff that was sent home from teachers that tended to be arithmetic book and the Pledge of Allegiance, you know, it's like, you know, sort of like really basic, and some presidential speeches, right? And that was sort of like how you would learn, you know, through your phonics and your English language. And then that's how you would learn your numbers. And, you know, we're obviously not in that scenario. So that would be a huge takeaway. And then the second other big takeaway, I really think would be that at the end of the day, you can really customize your learning experience. And it's connected to the first one, but I think the first one was more figure out what's going on. And to me, the second big point was ultimately thrive in whatever scenario you have. And that doesn't have to come at the expense of your job. Again, if both parents are working, or you're a single parent or a grandparent, and you're taking care of these kids, there's, again, a lot of structure and support out there that didn't exist before, which gives me great hope and optimism for the future. And certainly, it involves work on the front end and trust in partners that, you know, are worthy of that trust and aren't just trying to make a buck off of you, but there really is quite a bit out there to help you, you know, navigate this uncertain landscape. And I hopefully as a country, but all I can hope for is really your family will come out far better than what was ultimately 4 years of 1918, you know, sort of flu pandemic.
Right. Yeah. And thank you for that perspective. I think one conversation you and I have quite a bit is around what we can do for our families in terms of, like, we know the school system pretty well, having been in it for over a decade and looked at lots of different aspects of the education system. And so we know a lot of things we could do to help either supplement or complement or what we could do for our kids. What advice would you give parents that don't have that experience, like two parents who maybe had no experience with the education system, young kids, first and second grader, who are still kind of getting their bearings of the education system. What would you tell those parents in terms of how to go about figuring out what is the best situation for their kids during this time? Because a lot of people don't know the ins and outs of the school system. Where do you think they should start, and how should they go about setting up their fall so that they could handle whatever uncertainty comes their way?
Yeah, I'm going to actually steal some wisdom that you gave me around this, and really, you know, the past year as you've embraced and worked with your kids, setting up your own homeschool, and you know, you've two boys of differing age that were joining you each day for the journey. I remember at some point you saying that, you know, gosh, like every parent is an educator, right? Like we may not think it. And to be honest, there's a certain level of curricular jargon. There's a reason for it, and it helps people communicate over different cultures and over big distances, and helps to try and allow people to give them the language, professional educators, to talk about things, big picture or small. And yet, I think it unfortunately can be incredibly intimidating and overwhelming to parents who always have had to make decisions about what they do with their kids' education and their growth, but now more than ever are in the driver's seat for their kids. And that's a scary thing, but a wonderful thing, because all of those tools that make you an amazing parent, and you think about those days, we all have them, right? Where you're feeling like, man, that was a good day. I was my best self as a parent. And those days were, hey, that was a rough one. You know, we were doing the good work today, but I'm not sure if I came out ahead or how I define that. You feel like overwhelmed and sometimes like, yeah, you're in a bit over your head. And welcome to being a teacher. You know, like
right,
that's
right.
All the same and all the same instincts. And this is another area that I'd love to talk about maybe another time on a different podcast, in terms of the instincts of a teacher that, with the jargon, with corporatization of our education system, for better or for worse, it has made that feel so inaccessible. And absolutely, there is a need and a role for professionals who certainly have an understanding of, you know, brain science and childhood development, about, you know, how to have amazing advice and wisdom about how to set up curriculum and keep your kids fired up and involved. That's all awesome. You know, don't throw that out the window at all. But all that is out there when you find the right partners and you create, in my opinion, you know, pods, however that looks, right, of educational trust, right? The people who've got your back and are going to help you however you choose to customize, because that's what it is, you know, your family's educational experience. And so I guess to return to your question, I would really encourage parents, and I just love the fact, and this is why, you know, I love our conversations and the growth of all this, to realize that they have so many of the tools already to embrace that. It'll be a growth experience for sure. It was in the spring for so many of us, and yet, right, trust yourself, trust, you know, those parenting instincts, and ask for help when you need it in areas where you need it, because that collaborative effort anywhere on the spectrum, your educational choices, is powerful stuff. And I'd argue in multiple cases, maybe actually better than fall of 2019 before all this started.
Right. And I'd love to pull on that thread a little bit more, because one thing that I've noticed in my conversations with families trying to figure out what to do in the fall is that many, many parents don't view themselves as a teacher. There is a common answer that I get, or sorry, a common phrase that I hear from parents is that they say, I don't want to be the one that teaches my kids. And I've listened to that many times and I've scratched my head, obviously being the teacher of my boys in homeschool, but they have other careers. They've never really been a teacher. They view teaching as something completely separate from parenting. And obviously as educators, we know that learning happens everywhere. Essentially almost every second of the day, our kids are learning, our students are learning, and it may not be the lessons that we want to teach all the time. It may be because we lose our temper or whatever it is, but those students and those kids are going to be learning from us in every single interaction. And so my question for you is, how the heck do we shift that mindset? How do we help parents realize they've already been teaching their kids nonstop whenever they interact with them, and to teach I guess academic content is what they don't want to teach in their minds, I guess, these parents. They realize that they're teaching their kids life skills, but they want to stay away from academic skills. I guess, how do we bridge that gap, and how do we help parents find a way to realize that there's no line that they have to cross, because that line doesn't exist? Academic skills and life skills have always been blurred, and to separate them does a disservice for the students. And so, I'd love to get your thoughts. How the heck do we change that mindset? I don't know if there's any quick answer, but I'm curious, how do you think we start? Where do you think we go to help parents realize, hey, you can do this and you could have the biggest impact on your kids' lives with some minor tweaks to your mindset?
Yeah, and you said it so well. I in my conversations with parents this summer, and it's been fascinating and really important, because to be honest, just as an aside, right, too often as a teacher, it turns into this, not, I don't say adversarial is too strong, though that can happen too, where we feel like, well, the teacher really doesn't see the parent for much more than maybe an hour or two throughout the school year. And then you may chat on the phone or whatever, but you see the student, the child of that parent. And too often we tend to only interact with parents when, you know, either everyone's forced to, like a back to school night or whatever PTA meeting, or when there's a problem, quote unquote, for whichever or whomever of the parties, feels like there's a problem.
Right.
And so I got to say that, yeah, it's at the end of the day, those conversations have been awesome. And again, what a unique opportunity for all of us to sort of get back, get on the same page that, hey, we're actually all in the business of helping your kids grow up. And really, none of us really know who your child is, including your child, right? And
right,
we're all discovering, right? And we're all exploring and growing each day. And it sometimes feels like a maze, but there is a linear path to the journey. And so that's been awesome. And in those conversations, and I know, you know, you've done the same, where we've really encouraged parents to just give the sniff test in terms of, okay, you know, If I'm asking for help, who's actually an educator? Who's actually in it to help my child versus try and make a quick buck off of, you know, hey, I'll sell you this app, or hey, I'll sell you some space to have your learning pod in, or hey, you know, don't bail on whatever your school choice is because we're going to be offering this.
Right.
You know, like, what's your read on that? It just does it feel like you're partnered with a group or an institution that really has the best intentions for your child, and in which case that's awesome. And hey, who knows, in 2-3 months you may find that was not the case or partially the case. Cool, they're part of the journey. But if you're really uncertain about that, it's only gonna slow you down. There's just too much good stuff out there and too many good people out there in the educational space that you can do better. So, and to bring it back around to your question, I think some of it might be trust, and no doubt, right? I think when we're scared, and I was right there as a parent and still am, right? In the spring and all summer about so many aspects of the COVID life. But I think I've gotten better, and I encourage parents to sort of sit with that discomfort and realize that it can be used to take steps forward for your family. And so then the sort of second bit I really would say is that, if you decided tomorrow to teach a class of 30 kids and then teach 6 of those sections and coach a sport or what have you and run reports and deal with Common Core curriculum, and that's going to be a rough experience, because that's what professional teachers do. They teach and they reach out or try to reach out to individuals en masse in a standardized, mass-produced educational experience. And if anyone's telling you otherwise, do the numbers, right? What's the student teacher ratio in your kid's class? Like, how much time is that teacher giving your child? If only because there's only so much time in the day.
Right.
And so teachers are professionals at doing the best they can with that scenario. And they're, my gosh, there's some amazing teachers who can knock that out of the park. That takes some time to adjust to, right? I do think that anyone can get there, but that's not what we're asking, right? I mean, you know, we're talking at most a learning pod of 10 or so students, and potentially just your family, your kids. That's just human connection, right? That's just getting back to the basics of what fired you up when you were a kid, right? It was curiosity. It was compelling questions and mystery. It was, you know, feeling of student agency or like your kid's agency, like put them in the driver's seat in a safe, controlled space, proverbially or metaphorically, right? And you'd be amazed how much of the work that your kid will do. And also, that is a really nice setup that we're really advising parents on, is that you then don't have to be I don't know, it doesn't have to sacrifice your parental relationship with your child because right. you're screaming at them because they won't do the 75th long division problem. And maybe that's important, but I think there are other ways to get that child to want to do the 75th practice problem or to follow their intuition in a different direction that day altogether. And so I think we are advising parents to, as challenging as it is when we're backs feel like, it always feels like our backs are up against the wall, to sort of trust a bit and to look around and see that there's a lot of help out there. And then really like, to think back on their own experiences as a young person growing up and as a human being, because that is what the best teachers do one-on-one. It's what they do with a classroom of 30 kids. And certainly it's within the reach of any human being.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's definitely been a highlight of a lot of our conversations in terms of bringing the focus back to high quality relationships and how these learning pods give us that opportunity to develop much deeper relationships for the students and allowing that to foster that love of learning for kids to realize that there's someone in my corner constantly who's pushing me to be better, who is guiding me through this process of discovery. And I love the way that you put that in terms of the teacher doesn't really know the kid. The parent doesn't really know the kid. The kid doesn't even know himself or herself. And me as a parent hearing that, I'm like, yeah, that's absolutely right. Like I'm around my boys basically 24/7 and I'm teaching them. I'm figuring out what they're interested in. But when it comes down to it, I still don't really know what drives them internally. I don't know who they're going to become and what they're going to be super interested in. All I can do is expose them to as much as I can and try to find those glimpses of passion that crop up through all these experiences. And they may not even recognize some of those glimpses of passion. They may just see it as a kid just having fun. And so I love that idea of like, hey, none of us in this kind of triad of influence, guiding the student, the parent, and the teacher, none of those three have the full picture. And how can we use this moment to really magnify that idea of like, hey, like let's put the focus back on the students and let's take this opportunity for all of us to get to know that student way better, more than ever, including the student themselves. And so I'm curious, do you think there's any way to do that like in the fall on a global scale, whether it be in a traditional public school or a private school? Like, do you think that this might be that type of opportunity? And do you think that there's any possibility to make that happen quickly? Or is it just too overwhelming with everything else going on with COVID? Because I just think that idea that you had is so cool. I think that might be a cool idea to explore.
Yeah, no, thanks. And so something that we're really trying to scale up at Impact Connections in terms of trying to just get that message out there and then offer the support and resources so that parents can say, like, wow, absolutely. I've got this sort of innate parental human toolkit. And then added to that is this army of experts and top resources, in particular tools around student evaluation and growth, which can be incredibly important and is something that I think in those last two areas, I think the World Wide Web and the tech we have is an amazing opportunity, and something that educators were just sort of opening their eyes to when all this hit. And so you too, parents, and myself as a parent, right, are just beginning to see that combination of a parental instinct. And if I could add two things to my last response and then to your question right there,
yeah.
I think part of this misperception too is that the teacher is this expert, and certainly teachers are experts, but it isn't necessarily in the content that they're providing. They're as much an expert as anyone else, but nor is it also in being this, the term is like sage on a stage, right? This individual that is just delivering wisdom, like spouting out absolute gold.
Right.
And your children are sitting there like writing down notes and their minds are being blown and they're fast tracked to Harvard or wherever their goals are. That's just not reality, right? At the end of the day, great example, as a history teacher, and my major at Middlebury College was history, minor in art history, master's in liberal arts with a focus on linguistics and human culture. And that's great, right? I can bring that to the table, but actually I'm working at a school now, which is a heavy world history and sort of global institutions and cultures focus. And I had a lot of learning to do to get there. And still with every year, every day, every month, just learn a ton to offer to students. And yet at some point in my educational experience as a teacher, I realized, wait, me just talking at kids, no matter how much or little I know about the subject, is just not actually teaching. Right. Once again, any parent can recognize this, right? When I'm in the front seat, driver's seat, and I'm telling my kids, you know, don't pick your nose. Don't put that up your nose. Whatever. I'm just talking. How much that sinks in, right? How much of the wisdom, advice, rules, regulations, the words we say to our kids, how much of that sinks in? More often than not, I find as a parent, and then, of course, as an educator, that I have to do a lot of listening. Right? And you mentioned a second ago, you know, that none of us really know where our kids are going and who our kids are, including our kids. We're really trying to give parents the tools and the advice to not do the old school teaching thing of like, oh, I got to know everything and I got to be the sage on the stage. I really not even sure if you could, you know, it was $1 million challenge, quarter munch, long division. Here's a problem. good luck. I'm almost positive I would fail. And that's right. What is it? Third grade math. I don't even know what that is. Right.
Yeah.
And whatever, I, you know, I don't know if you ask me a random fact about U.S. history or world history, there's a decent chance I might get it wrong. You know, right, that's not what makes me, I think, a dynamic educator that can help people, though I'm certainly, you know, learning as I go as well.
Right.
So parents, you know, you actually might find that you're becoming a better parent when you take the steps necessary to take control of your kids and your family's education this fall. Because it forces you to listen more, to really assess, like, wait, what is going on here? My child is struggling in this area, but loves this area. Interesting. I didn't expect that. All right, let's like explore, right? Like, doesn't mean that first area where they're struggling or uninterested isn't important. We'll find a creative way to maybe come back around to that. That's a core skill that we really got to address. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, again, this is an awesome opportunity, and I think what has me so fired up about Impact Connections is that there's never been more conversation between qualified educators and people who love, you know, your kids, want to help your kids,
right?
And parents, home, kids. And then the second answer to your question, great question about how, like, can we take this bigger? Can this really change education on a global level? Circles back around to that question of equity and inclusion, and rightfully so. In the past 2 weeks, in the press and just sort of commentary, there's been a lot of criticism of learning pods and steps some families have taken to take care of their family however they can in the fall with whatever tools and resources they have. And I don't disagree at a macro level that COVID and this whole mess is exposing fault lines and you know, inequality that has existed for a long, long time in our country, at least. I'll just focus on the United States. And that's completely unacceptable, without question. And what has me excited, and I hope we can continue to share the message, that a lot of these micro school partnerships and the tools that we can provide folks do require access to some level of technology, a phone and internet, but not always. And I've seen in a lot of areas that outside of the educational sphere, that is an area being hopefully addressed more and more. So I think about Baltimore, my hometown, and the amazing job the Enoch Pratt Library and other nonprofits have done to offer sort of mobile tethering and hotspot areas and parking lots and try and in sort of the nonprofit realm, make that a public utility that more and more people have, even if they're in quarantine and isolated in those ways. And so, you know, I know that we at Impact Connections are looking at models that really turn the traditional educational business model, so to speak, or org chart on its head and really show that a degree, and this is some of the brilliant work I think you've done, and I've been so fired up about, Steve, and I hope you talk about more. And, you know, with regards to if we can actually work with our neighbors, whatever resources, and give a bit of our time and maybe take, let's say, an hour or a chunk of time that day, a whole day, whatever it might be, with a group of kids, and then share that next day and share the day after that, share Thursday and share Friday within a model that is safe. Everyone agrees upon, you know, whether it be a micro school, homeschool, whatever the scenario is. and ultimately is supported by some of the best, strongest pedagogical backing that Impact Connections is willing to give to qualifying individuals at no cost. You realize when you do the math, oh my gosh, right? We don't need to be spending 50 grand on every student. And we're not, by the way, we're spending that closer to the prisoners in our country. And that's a whole different, incredibly sad issue. And yet, right, we can bring and drive the cost down per student or per family member basis of education. But again, it's creating the structures, it's trusting what's out there. And yet certainly it's within reach, or it's, we're getting closer to putting that within the reach of more and more Americans. I hope that's true worldwide. And I'm optimistic about the future. And I don't disagree that there are big criticisms of equity in education today in our country. I agree with many of them, but I am optimistic that we can do better next year and we can do even better the year after that, because there's a lot of stuff we haven't tried yet. And there's a lot of opportunity amidst all the chaos if parents are willing to lean in a bit.
Right. Absolutely. And I love your optimism. I definitely share your optimism. I think one of the biggest challenges that we have, unfortunately, is the political climate that we are living in right now. And obviously that dampers some of the optimism, just the fact that there is this political climate that we have to wade through. And so I'm curious, knowing your background, knowing your history background and your economics background, do you view or do you think there's any way to separate what's best for the student with the politics? I think there's just so many challenges that we have to work through when it comes to the politics, but constantly you're seeing politics make these decisions in education that aren't necessarily for what's best for the student. And so do you view as any way forward where we could separate out politics and somehow get to a consensus that, hey, we're just going to do everything that's best for as many students as possible? And obviously that sort of agreement is never going to happen, but do you know of a way to make it less political today?
Yeah. I think that's $1 million question, right? Just in terms of, there shouldn't be no money. You know, that's sort of the big democratic question about our great experiment in this country. I would just urge families carrying any beliefs, holding any beliefs, from whatever spectrum on any given issue, to get back to a previous point, take a breath, take a moment, and realize that, hey, the politics that we think of really tend to be, you know, turbocharged, either entertainment, right, or people trying to make a buck, whether it be the politicians or those around them, or, big, very powerful players jockeying for even more power. And I don't even pretend to know the half of it. It's just what I can sort of read and research about. But all I can do to help me sleep at night is try and get back to the core unit. You know, where am I coming from? Where's my family at? What do my kids need? And then I can really come to, an empathetic place pretty quickly from there and realize, hey, any other family around our country, just to focus on the United States, you know, has those same priorities. They just want what's, you know, best for their kids, and they're doing the best they can with the limited hours we have on, you know, with those kids. I've seen this crazy statistic, and I'll have to put it in the show notes, about how much of the time we spend with our kids is really before they go off to college. I mean, it was more than 80%, right? It blew my mind. Maybe you gave it to me, and we'll put it in the show notes, I promise. But it just made me realize, wow, like, I hated parts of the quarantine experience and feeling like I was trying to work, parent, and everything else at the same time. And it was just overwhelming in every which way. I'm not sure if I did any of them as best as I could, but I did my best. And yet, I got a lot more time with my kids, and I got to watch my youngest son walk, take his first steps, and all these amazing things.
Nice, right.
And that's, in a weird sort of way, we're all having that experience, a lot more time together. And we tend to want what's best for our kids and best for ourselves and to support each other as a family unit. And I really feel like that is just the overlap that we all share, you know, far and away, right? And that can hopefully take us past politics. Right. And to be honest, what excites me about the micro school movement, and that we're hearing from and seeing so many parents who need to, but many also choosing to take control, or at least take more control of their children and how they raise their children from an educational standpoint. I gotta say, like, that doesn't have to be a political choice necessarily, right? You know, is there at some point, is it possible that bigger picture that, you know, counties, states, our country either make it easier or harder to create micro schools? Maybe, right? And you know, Impact Connections, at least I can only speak for us, right, is going to help you navigate, you know, what you need to do to sort of set up your micro school so that it's legal and that it's all squared away. Thankfully, that's not where we're at in terms of the politics of it, and I don't need to worry about writing a letter to my senator one way or the other. We could just continue, you know, trying to help people and sharing best practices and all the amazing support that's out there for them. But I just got to hope that this is, you know, again, trying to find silver lining in COVID and all that, that this is laid bare, that education doesn't have to be political. That, yes, of course, when we're talking the country and the billions upon billions of dollars we spend each year in education, it becomes political. But for your family, it does not. And certainly not if you have the right people helping you in your corner.
Right. Absolutely. I think that's a great way to put it and find that commonality versus pushing to the extremes. And so, yeah, no, that's a great way to put it. I'd love to run some rapid fire questions by you to finish up here. And so I have three questions for you.
Yeah, I'm going to try and keep these really short. So I have like a couple sentences because I could talk about this all day. Yeah. So we'll keep in the rapid fire routine because you know me, I could talk all day about this stuff. It just fires me up.
Right, right. No, absolutely. And so, yeah, I'm going to try to probably start asking these to all of our guests just to get their thoughts. But question number one, what part of your education do you hope is still around for your kids?
Wow. So what I experienced growing up and want to sort of my kids to have the same experience.
Right, right.
Whew, I feel like I had parents and depending on the teacher, certain teachers that saw that I could learn as much about myself through the activities I loved, you know, whatever sport it might be, because I'm into a bunch of different sports or just recently, you know, I was teaching a virtual class on bread making and I was sort of learning alongside the kids. And I got to say, I've learned more about myself through those experiences and more about the world, you know, et cetera, et cetera, through the support and sort of encouragement around the stuff I loved. And I would be devastated if my kids, you know, were somehow denied that or were put into a situation or a school district or had a teacher that didn't also see the extreme value in that. And so, yeah.
Nice. That's awesome. What part of your education do you hope your kids never experience?
You know, I think I know, and I wonder if all, you know, all of our listeners and the parents we work with, the families we work with, can think back on some of the most visceral or intense memories they have from their education, from growing up. And I have some great ones with great teachers and great people and great moments, but I have some really negative ones too, usually with human beings that were, you know, I'm sure well-intentioned or, you know, who knows, right? Maybe they were having a rough year or were working through some of their own things. I don't fault them. I don't certainly fault any educator for trying, but man, I had some people in my life that it was just all about them or all about a separate agenda. And we're really just looking to fit me into, even if they're looking at me in the first place, you know, but everyone had to fit into whatever that worldview or whatever their shtick was. And it does a lot of harm, especially at a young age. And I do think that's why when I think into the future, structuring and really having people help you think through what you want your family's learning pod experience to look like or your fall educational journey, your family's fall educational journey to look like is so important because if you don't get the right partners, whether it be you running the show, a tutor, a teacher, whatever, you know, you can create structures that can, you know, like, sure, do some damage, but if nothing else, just really frustrate your kids and you might find yourself in October or November needing, you know, a little more help.
Right. Yeah, that's a great answer. Thank you. Last question. What experience do you hope your kids have that doesn't exist in today's education system?
I would love my kids to have the experience, and certainly it's not possible right now given the COVID scenario and the fact that we're all socially distancing and that's okay. Right. But I don't know if it happens at many educational institutions, but I really wish they'd had the chance to interact with people of all walks of life, to you know, worked for change in lots of different parts of our country over many different issues with people that really are, you know, disagree with them or just see the world in different ways. And I got to say, I had an amazing education, and my parents did everything they could to give me the opportunities that they could. And I'll be forever indebted. I know we're all trying to do that for our kids. But I definitely, when I look back on it, I think, man, that was a pretty siloed experience,
right.
and not necessarily forcing me to confront the reality of our world. And I just hope that my kids can do one better, and that certainly as an educator now, I know and I can see, and through, you know, our long conversations, I've come to appreciate the wisdom and perspective you bring on this, Steve, that the world is our schoolhouse. It sounds so cheesy, but you can teach the next president of the United States. I'm not saying I want my kids to follow that path, but hey, if they want to go there, go for it. You can empower your children. You can show them the greatest human and, you know, the wisdom of the ages through the world around them. And you're still questioning too. And I hope I and whatever path we take have the courage to do so, because it is certainly possible. And I hope to start that journey, or the next step of that journey, this fall.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Thank you. I think you shared a ton of amazing wisdom for our audience today. And again, this will probably be the first of many, many conversations between us on this podcast. But thank you very much for your time today. And we will keep the conversation going and see where it brings us next.
Hey man, journey of a lifetime. It's been such a pleasure. And I look forward to anyone out there listening, reach out. I hope you hear that we're willing, friendly, and we have a lot to share. And we hope we can really, really help folks just make sense of, and maybe make the best of, whatever that even means, right? You know, the next couple months and well beyond, as we're all forced to and have the opportunity to take back our kids' education. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Learning Pod Network. If you'd like more information about our offerings and services, please go to www.impactconnections.org. You can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at ImpactConnectED. We will also be releasing our weekly newsletter called Teaching Tuesday, every Tuesday, where you'll get a summary of all of our latest information and resources that we have found as we explore the best practices of learning pods and education during COVID-19. So thank you, and we hope you'll join us next week. Take care, be well, and teach together.